What's up? It's Andrea. Today, we hear the 1989 sexy music way too much. Troy gets mansplained the entire episode. And we ask the question, how are horses test-driven? Stay tuned.
Welcome to the TNG Podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
I'm your co-host, Andrea. Charisse, today we are talking Season 3, Episode 8, entitled The Price. This episode was written by Hannah Louise Shearer and directed by Robert Shearer, although their last names are spelled differently, so I assume there's maybe no connection, but who knows? I don't know. Who knows? So here's the plot summary for The Price. Stardate 43385.6. The crew plays host to a group of visiting interplanetary dignitaries who are negotiating for the rights to a stable wormhole in the Gamma Quadrant discovered by the Barzan people, which could provide a valuable and efficient bypass through space. Deanna Troi, overwhelmed by her duties as ship's counselor, reluctantly agrees to attend the delegation's reception. She meets Devanoni Rahl, a negotiator for one of the groups. Rahl and Troi fall into an instant passionate affair. Cue the sexy music.
And there was some sexy 80s music going on.
Was there ever? Oh, you guys are going to be treated, listeners, to definitely some peak 1989 sexy music. Because it's part of this. So before we really jump in, initial thoughts, Charisse.
So my overall thoughts about this episode is that it was nice. We do get a bit of character development on Troi. I really like the slice of life for Troi. I like seeing what does her life look like when she's not sitting on the bridge saying gratitude and joy, but she's like just having a normal life, you know, like, oh, letters from my mom and I'm having a hard day and just like, you know, dating, just like normal, like being a normal, well-rounded human.
Yes.
That was really, really lovely. I also thought this episode to me was not like a standout. I don't totally remember it. However, I literally can't complain about it. Like, this is just the theme for me for season three so far is that, good enough. Like, every episode is so good that, like, even though it may not be amazing, great, I think about it all the time and I talk about the episode. It's not like that, but it's also not, it's not bad. It's legitimately not bad. I can't really complain about anything that went terribly wrong in this episode.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. When I saw the title, The Price, you know, there are some titles that really, really stand out, you know, where you look at the title and you're like, I know what this is. I'm talking Inner Light. I'm talking The Offspring,
Times
Best of Arrow, Both Worlds, Times
Deja
Arrow,
Q, Yesterday's Deja Enterprise. Q,
yes. All of those, like a lot of which are in season three where you're like, oh yes, like these ones. I was like, The Price? Question mark. But then I saw the screenshot of like Rahl's blazing blue eyes. And I was like, oh, this one. Yeah, totally. I will say I'm at the point now in Star Trek TNG where it feels just so natural and like not unforced that I'm having a really hard time watching the episodes and reviewing them for this podcast where we saw like those super racist and like incredibly shitty episodes in season one and a few in season two where most of my notes were like, what the F is this? And what the F is that? And now I'm just watching and then I have to catch myself and go, okay, I've just watched 25 minutes and I haven't written down a single note other than to describe like basically like narration of what's happening, but I don't even have a lot of thoughts about it because it's just so good. And like, it doesn't feel forced. It's just, things flow so naturally. Like it doesn't stand out. Yeah. So
it's really nice. Like so far season three has just been like a day at the beach. It's just very chill.
Yes.
Like
yes.
You don't really have to take in too much. You don't have to do too much. You just kind of relax and enjoy it. So I'm excited to get through our next couple of episodes because in season three later on, there are some episodes that I love that are some of my favorites of all time. So like, I'm going to be gushing pretty soon here, but just not today.
Just not yet. Okay. So I'm going to stop you there real quick because upon you saying it's a day at the beach and we don't have to do much, I'm like, wow, Charisse and I really do the beach differently. Cause I'm
we
like,
do the beach very differently. We do. It's like we do
beach. I'm talking snorkeling and surfing right off the bat. And you're like, I'm going to sit.
Literally, that's it.
And it's not a dig. It's just,
sometimes I stand, I walk over to the water, I put my feet in, then I go sit back down, I read a good book, I have a snack, I roll over. I go put my feet in again. It's just so like, I just soak up the sun.
And then I come out, running with my surfboard being like, did you see those last 30 waves? Oh, right.
Like, yeah. Totally so different. You and I would never be at the beach at the same time because you have to surf at like 6 a.m. and I wouldn't roll up to the beach till like 11 a.m. So yeah. Like, we wouldn't even cross paths.
Till a normal person. I will say, when I do go to the beach to just like chill and hang out, it is 11 a.m. You're right. But yeah, when I'm surfing, I'm like, oh, it's dawn. Let's go. Let's paddle out immediately. So you guys are learning way more about me and my surfing habits than you really need to know. But anyway, all right. So let's just jump right in. Troy comes into her quarters and she is tired. And I know what you mean about that slice of life. Like, this is kind of the first time you really see outside of like 10 forward and people just hanging out and socializing. And even then you kind of have to be on and be, you know, you have to look presentable.
It's still a public situation.
Yes. She is rolling into her quarters and she's like, ugh, you know, practically taking her bra off and her shoes off and just relaxing because she's tired. And haven't we all been there? And she's like, you know, trying to listen to like letters from her mom. And of course there's three of them today alone. So I'm like, oh dear God, what is this poor woman's like voicemail must look like?
I literally thought this was going to be a Lwaxana Troy episode. And I was like, did I miss something? When she said so three letters, I was like, oh my gosh. Like I was bracing myself the same way Troy was bracing herself, where she was just like, oh, start the letters. I was just like, oh gosh, like, is she coming on board? And then when Picard like combadged her and was like, hey, we have delegates. I was like, oh crap. Because her mom became a delegate in that last episode.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Fish head people. So I was like, yes. Oh man, Lwaxana's coming. How did I miss that this was another Lwaxana episode? But it wasn't. Phew. But yeah, I agree. Because we've seen her in her quarters before. Like with those, I forget the name of the episode, but with the two people on the planet who didn't die when the rest of the planet was destroyed. And like he had put that song into her head and we saw her in her quarters, like
the survivors.
Yeah. So we did see her in her quarters, like not all polished, but that was because an alien was mind controlling her.
Yeah. He was like mind fucking her. It was really bad. Yeah.
Yeah. This was like just tired. Normal person, like tired at the end of the day. And I really enjoyed that. And as Troy goes to order her chocolate, which we come to find, this is like a thing about her character. Mm-hmm. She loves chocolate, especially chocolate ice cream. She loves chocolate. And this may be the first time we find that out about her.
It actually is the first time that is revealed she has a weakness for chocolate. And I have a little teeny behind the scenes, just a little dive. In reality, the actress who plays Troy, Marina Sirtis, did not enjoy the chocolate her character ate. She hated it. So for a few reasons. Number one, that uniform was so skin tight. She couldn't gain any weight. So she had a spit bucket. Anytime she like took a bite, she had to spit it out immediately after they called cut. So she had to like hold it in her mouth. Also,
that's no fun at all.
Although I kind of relate because chocolate ice cream is like not a thing I like. So I watch her eat that and I'm always like, ugh. But this is a more like realistic issue. They had these blazing hot stage lights, which would just kind of turn that chocolate after hours of sitting under these hot lights to kind of like, just like chocolate soup. So it was very unappetizing, but yeah, she had to like spit it out after every take. Although we haven't seen her eat chocolate yet, but this is her first time where she's like, I'm tired and I'm revealing this is my comfort food, chocolate. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's interesting is I guess they haven't worked this out yet in their like rules of the ship, but the replicator says to her, like, I can only replicate things of nutritional value.
Yes. And I saw that. That is a straight up lie. I would not last 5 minutes on that damn ship. Computer, macaroni and cheese, but computer, like, chicken tenders,
but like, you know, like whiskey's not of like nutritional value. And they were making that for the Mariposans or whatever.
It sure isn't. It's toxin. It's just toxin. Liquid toxin.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can even order it without the synthahol, like straight up real alcohol. So I'm like, okay, they haven't worked on the rules of this yet. So you can get all the alcohol your heart desires, but chocolate, that's unacceptable. I was like, come on now. Like all the vices should be able to be catered by this device. right. But yeah, so I thought that was interesting. And I'm like, well, I'm glad they changed that.
It should be equal opportunity vices. Cause yes, whiskey is just liquid poison, which granted I'm a whiskey gal and I love a good whiskey. So I would have that, but you can't make me like some fatty, salty comfort food. I'm off the ship.
Put me on a mining colony, but no mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Hard pass.
All right. So she is exhausted and is just trying to like lie there in her chair. And Captain Picard requests her presence at 10 forward to view this wormhole. And Picard is being so obtuse and just not picking up like any signs, because she's like, I'm not really dressed. He's like, oh, nonsense, just throw anything on, which granted, she walked in the same outfit that she walked out of her quarters, so she didn't even bother changing. She's like, I don't care.
Yeah. And also, he couldn't see her body language, right? And she definitely put on a face when she answered the comm, right? Because she's oh, what is it now? And then she's like, hello, Captain.
Yeah,
you know, so like, how's he supposed to know that she's not feeling it? And plus, if she was in person, she would have done the same thing. She wouldn't have sighed and looked all tired. She would have been like, sure, Captain. What do you need, Captain? You know?
I did have a comm badge catch, which, you know, is one of my things. Your thing is beaming through shields and mine is the comm badge. I love that we have things.
Yeah.
This is where we're at in our podcast. Okay. So we have seen many times that someone will comm badge you and you don't need to touch your comm badge to respond.
Correct.
So he says, Captain Picard to Counselor Troi, and she goes, oh, what now? And then she touches her comm badge and goes, yes, Captain. And I was like, girl, don't do that. Like, you are live. You're like, the captain can hear what you're saying. Yeah. I just thought that was so funny. I was like, okay, so the writers today decided that you do have to touch your fucking comm badge to like respond.
I feel like I'm going to say, as you know, as a crew member on the ship, I would like to have to touch my badge, because what if you're in the middle of something very private when someone comm badges you?
What if you're going to the bathroom?
Or anything, like, or, you know, having sex or brushing your teeth or whatever, and someone comm badges you and they just hear all the sounds you're making. Like, that's not cool. We don't want, nobody wants that. So I feel like you should have to touch the button.
You know what it is?
And there should also be an away message.
Yep. It's an invasion of privacy, because if I listen to podcasts all the time, I'm always listening to audiobooks constantly. So I have it on if I'm doing dishes, if I run to the restroom, it's just the, you know, I like leave the phone on the counter and I'm like showering and listening to an audiobook. But if there's no option for me to like decline the call and it just automatically comes through, I'd be like, what the hell? Like, I would never carry my phone with me, because people could just barge in on my privacy.
Yeah.
So they have to iron some kinks out on this. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not there for that. Anyway, so here's something that I had a thought about. Counselor Troi comes in. She meets the delegates and she meets Devanani Rall, who's a negotiator for the Cresselian race, which we never see. Mm-hmm. And the woman who is in charge, the Barzan woman, who's like, okay, this is the wormhole. I'm going to present it to you. It's yours for the best price. And she says, okay, well, the wormhole is ready to appear. Let's all come to the front, you know, the windows of 10 forward. Mm-hmm. And she says, the wormhole appears every 233 minutes. And the way that everybody was making such a big effing to do about it, I thought she was going to say it appears every 233 years or something. I was like, 233 minutes. That's like every 3.5 or 4 hours. You don't need to have like a big reception to like use this. It's like,
I thought something similar. I didn't catch the minutes, but I did think something similar where I was like, why are we staring at a wormhole like we've never seen a wormhole before? Like, why is that special? Until they describe like, this is the first stable wormhole. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. I was like, first stable wormhole? That doesn't sound right. That sounds like that's not going to go well. Mm-hmm. And remember, like, I don't remember this episode. So I was like, yeah, stable wormhole, that's not a thing. So it's either like a man-made thing or like something fishy's going on if this is stable. But if it really, really was, this definitely is something to see. And then we find out that they're also, all these delegates are bidding on ownership of the stable wormhole. And it's like, and again, now it makes sense that everybody's here.
Like, it's a presentation of the goods. Yeah.
100%. It's like selling a horse or something. If this is how you sell horses, I have no idea. I don't know why I picked that analogy.
I was just wondering, Charisse, where are you going with this, girl?
I mean, yeah,
horse people.
We're not at all, but I have a student who like bought a horse, and this is what happened in my imagination, is that you like, look at, you know, like bring it out and look at all the stuff and like,
you try test drive it, you know? It. You push all the buttons.
Yeah. Sure. Feed it or something. I'd really
roll down the whip, brush it and give it some oats. I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know how they test them. So that was a terrible analogy to use. But the point is, that's what was going on, is they're like, look at this beautiful wormhole. Do you want it? Do you want it? And then I was like, oh, okay. That kind of, now this makes more sense in context, why we're all so amazed that there's a wormhole here. And also, this is not going to work out. I already knew. I was like, the stable wormhole, this is not going to be a thing. Cause that doesn't become a thing until Deep Space Nine.
Totally feeling a lot of surprise when they're like stable wormhole. And I didn't remember this episode very well. So I was like, ooh, okay. Also, if you do know how you test drive a horse, email us info@thetjpodcast.com. Cause now I'm curious. I should ask one of my friends. She has horses and rides horses.
And we're curious, but not curious enough to Google it. We're not that curious.
I'm not curious enough to deep dive it. That's where we're at right now. But if you know how horses are sold, let us know. All right. So, okay. I want to talk about the Barzam costume really quick.
Yes.
Speaking of horses, what the hell? Okay. That mouthpiece looked like she had a bridle in her mouth and it was so cringy. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking from a practical costuming perspective, like, are there little hooks that just go into the corner of her mouth? Are they just kind of like glued, sticky tape or something?
Stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's so weird. I couldn't get past it. I really couldn't listen to a damn thing that woman was saying because I was like, all I could stare at was that bridle, that like horse bridle in her mouth. I was like,
But there's nothing in her mouth. The things
on the sides. Yeah. I think conceptually it's a cool idea, but realistically she could talk to me for an hour and I'm like, I'm sorry, what are you saying? Like, I'm just looking at this hideous thing around your mouth. I did not like that.
I actually liked it because it reminded me of the, gosh, what are those aliens who had that mouthpiece in front that gave them all the like nitrogen and like vapor?
Are you talking about like the Benzites?
Yeah. It reminded me of the Benzites. So the Benzites had this device in front of their mouths that had like steam and smoke come up. And the idea was that they're amphibious creatures. And so they needed a certain amount of moisture. So they like carried around this device that kept the right amount of atmosphere in front of their mouths.
Yeah, it was like quite built brilliant. Up from like the chest of their uniform and kind of like almost like a harmonica. Like a harmonica holder, yeah, just kind of sits in front.
It probably was a harmonica with some dry ice in it, but it looked so dope. It looked really cool.
You're so right. If I were making a Benzite costume, wow, we are way off topic here, but yes, okay, totally.
So this is what my thinking was with the Barzan woman, is that that was a similar thing because she mentioned in the start of their negotiations, she said, as most of you know, our planet is too harsh for almost any living thing to live on. So it's really hard for us to do trade and blah, blah, blah. And so I thought maybe that's what this is. This is like the thing for the Benzites, but it's like providing her the certain kind of atmospheric mixture that she needs on her super harsh planet. Yeah. And it just didn't want to totally 100% rip off the Benzite thing.
Yeah.
Because like, then you'd be like, wait, is she a Benzite? And it doesn't make sense because she's not amphibious. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's what my thinking was. And with that thinking, I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. Like that's another way to deliver like the right mixture, but there was nothing coming out of it. And they didn't say that's what it was for. So
yeah, it just, to me, it just seemed like ceremonial adornment. Although I think about the adornments that we put on our bodies that also make no sense.
Yeah.
Earrings.
Like all jewelry.
Let me poke holes in your flesh and just dangle things from it. When you say it that way.
Pretty things.
Yes. When you say, by the way, I have like 500 pairs of earrings because I freaking love like earrings.
Yeah.
Right. But the idea behind, if you were to have a Martian come down and you explain like, yes, we're going to take this sharp thing and damage your tissue and permanently so that you can dangle adornments off of it, sounds extremely barbaric. It sounds ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess the idea is I'm used to earrings because we've been wearing earrings for millennia and like jewelry, but I've never seen this woman with her stupid bridle in her mouth. So it looks ridiculous to me, but I guess if you are raised with it, I don't know. I guess it looks normal. I guess, you know, I remember hearing this quote once and it stuck with me. A body can get used to anything except dying. Right. Mm. So it's like, you can get used to just about anything. Anything starts seeming normal to you. Look at this last year with COVID. Like this is just normal life now until X
until
time.
It's not. Yeah.
Until it's not, until we're back to whatever it was before. Anyway, so yeah, I was not a fan of that uniform or that adornment. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, so they're at the negotiating table and three Ferengi show up completely unexpectedly, as they would, because they have no damn manners.
Oh, wait, we missed a part.
Oh, go for it.
Yeah, we missed the part before the Ferengi show up, before they're in the observation lounge, when they're still back in 10 forward looking at the beautiful wormhole, Troy meets Raul.
Yes. Right?
And that's the first time that it's like, cue the sexy music. Although they didn't play it then, they just showed them locking eyes. But I was waiting to see, like, you could almost feel the tension in the air.
Yes.
And you just, like, I could almost see the breeze blowing through Troy's hair as she's looking at him. It was a very moment. It was a moment.
Yes, it definitely was a moment. So that's a little foreshadowing of, like, what's going to happen in this episode. He also had a woman hanging on him, which he very quickly sent home to wherever the hell she came back from. And like, he was staring at her with his eyes that are like ice blue. And I was completely enraptured by this man's eyes. I mean, they're so blue. I was like, what the hell? So good job for that actor. For congratulations on having just about the most beautiful eyes I've ever seen. But the way he was looking at her was a little too intense, where I was like, buddy, break eye contact like 30 seconds in. Okay. Don't like stare into her soul and learn all about her and everything that is her. And then it was just a little much for me, but you know, whatever.
Honestly, whatever. I had a feeling you were going to have some thoughts on this. I was like, Andrea always feels like guys are coming on too strong and they're like doing too much. And perhaps this is from personal experience. I don't know. I always am so aloof that I feel like, yeah, whatever. Like, you have to be more obvious for me. But like, I was like, I know Andrea has a thing about guys coming on too strong. And this guy is the picture in the definition, in the dictionary definition of a guy who comes on too strong. So I was like, I know she's just going to have so many thoughts, but at the same time, in his defense, the Beta Z thing, like, because he's from Beta
but we don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet. Exactly. Yeah. But like,
but you're right.
That's the reason why he could be so forceful. Unlike, gosh, the guy who had the three interpreters who had the chorus.
Oh,
like,
yes.
He didn't know what the heck was going on with Troy. And he was all like, hey there, talking to her with his lust interpreter. And it was like,
The penis interpreter was talking. Yeah.
Correct. But in this case, we don't know that yet. But he does know that Troy's just as into him as he is into her. So he does have a little more leeway to be more forward because he's not guessing. He knows exactly how she's responding to him. But at the same time, yes, without us knowing that, it's just like, wow, like she's
too much.
He's staring just as hard at him though. So like maybe the wormhole's on that side, girl. Like, I don't know.
But yes, anyways. My wormhole is up here. Okay.
up here.
All right. So yes. Okay. I think you are right though. I have in my past had a couple of men come on way too strong. And I was like, read the signs, read the room. You're moving too fast and too much and too intense. And I don't like that. So I guess maybe I am projecting a little, I don't know.
Anyway, you're not necessarily wrong. Like, he was absolutely coming on too strong. I'm just saying he had a kind of an edge to know that he would not rejected.
Well, by the end of by the end of this episode, I'll tell you, I wanted Worf to just smack the smirk off of his face as hard as his two-fisted Klingon punch could go, because this is like the cringiest dude, but we'll get into that in a little bit. So three Ferengi do show up unexpectedly to bid for the wormhole, and they bring like a whole thing of gold. And I do like that they beam right into the observation lounge. And the thing they're most concerned about is, we need more chairs.
And I love the way they say it too. They're just like, chairs. Are you in charge of the chairs? Go get me some chairs.
Yes. And then I actually wrote, who does get the chairs? Because you've got engineering and medical and like command. Like, is there
a legitimate question?
Where's like the janitorial team or the like maintenance staff?
It's the same people
staff
who clean like bloodstains and Borg out of the carpets. It's the same people.
And they're still working on that Borg stain, by the way, and the Antigen and Cele like blood pile. Yeah. maybe it's them. Yeah. Where are they anyway? So yeah, I love that Picard is like, okay, one of you can stay here and the two of you, like, we'll get accommodations and you can have my chair. So that was kind of cool that Picard did that, but I was like, but who does actually get the chairs? So now we know the Ferengi are in the fight for the stable wormhole. And it cuts back to Troy, who's intrigued by Rahl, and she's doing a 24th century Google search on him. And the computer is like reading all the information, like where he's from and blah, blah, blah. And the computer is reading this information aloud, and Rahl rings the doorbell. And I'm surprised that Troy just like, I thought for sure she would like quickly push that one button to like turn off the search or close it. I've never seen those, like, for lack of a better term, laptops be shut. Yeah. I've only seen them open. And you can like spin them and they have that one button. But girl, hit the button. Hit the button. But I guess the computer had stopped talking at the perfect spot because he didn't notice that she was cyber stalking him.
Yeah, even when he walked behind the computer and I was like, isn't his picture still on the screen?
Screensaver, like flying toasters, something.
You know that screensaver's space.
There are no like green rolling hills like Apple does. Or like, what is it? Not Apple. Who is it?
No.
PC. You know, they have Windows. Windows always has those damn hills.
I don't know.
Anyway, so at first, and I mean really at first, for the first like 30 seconds. They have this like delicate little dance around like the conversation of their attraction. And then he swoops in for the kill. Cue the 1989 sexy music. He swoops in peak 1989 machismo cringy AF manner. He mansplains her psyche to her where he's like, oh, mm-hmm. I get it. You're the ship's counselor all the time. You don't know how to turn it off. Mm-hmm. Man, you have known her for all of 1 minute. I do not like when people try to mansplain how I am to me. I'm like, I don't need you to tell me how I am. I know how I am. I've owned and operated my body for 38 years. I don't need you to tell me. So she's attracted to this man, but clearly made super uncomfortable by like the removing of the headband. Did you see that part? He like took her headband off and then did a very sexy lice check. Like it was the sexiest lice check I've ever seen.
He's just all in her hair. Like, who does that?
And when he went to remove the headband, and I'm harping on the headband a lot, but it's important. She starts saying like, please don't, you know, and then he's like, shh, 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 shh. You know, he does that bullshit. And she is like conflicted because he's making her fucking uncomfortable, but she's also like wildly attracted to this man. So she's kind of like stuck and doesn't know what to do.
Yeah. Is it a discomfort of excitement or a discomfort of like, I don't want this. She's like, not sure. Does she want it or not?
Well, fortunately for the audience, she's written by 1989 female standards. So her feelings don't matter at all. And she's immediately like gives into him like instantly. And I wrote so yucky in capital letters. I didn't dig it. Although I will say, I do think Troy looks better without the headband. I got to say.
I just love Troy's hair like this. Like, I love her flowing. I mean, holy cow. Like, that's like all the hair I've ever had
altogether
combined.
I was thinking about that. They had to have put in a ton of like extensions.
Yes. So many extensions.
Filler hair and stuff. Yeah. Because nobody's got that much damn hair. But yes.
Nobody does.
As a curly girl myself, who's never been able to like make my curls do what I want them to do, I've always envied that. Except for, you know, season one, like, poofy, Jerry curl, cheerleader, glitter hair, whatever the fuck that was. Like, now her hair looks amazing. And I'm always like, damn it. Why doesn't my hair look like that? Because I don't have a team of 20 every 5 minutes, like
with 75 extensions.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was very weird. And, you know, I'm the one to say that I like when a guy is more obvious about his feelings.
Because your data.
Because I'm data. Yes. But this is the exception to that rule. Like all of this, it was just not okay for me. I was just like, everything about this, I'm going to need you to take 3 steps back. Like no one said you could touch me. I don't even care if it's my hair. Like, especially my hair, actually, cause I'm a Black woman, especially my hair. I'm going to need you to take 3 steps back.
Yes.
And, this is all going way too fast and nobody's like, why are you all in my mind and trying to be like, here's who you are and here's who you need to be. Like,
don't tell me who I am. I do not like that.
I don't know you. You don't know me. Mm-hmm. Like this. Yeah. This whole scene was very weird, but again, we're always going to see Troy in these weird situations where guys want to have sex with her and they're weird about it. Mm-hmm. And she's always down. So I don't know why,
you know,
because of the writers, but she's always like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Counselor Troy is DTF. She's always down for it. She always is. Even if the male in question is like very delicate about it, very obvious about it, very arrogant about it. And man, Rawl, I know he's a negotiator. So he's got to come in with like some
persuasive skills.
Yeah, persuasive skills and like confidence, but arrogance is so unattractive. I couldn't deal. I couldn't deal with just how the mansplaining was really, really gross. All right. So it kind of quickly cuts to Captain Picard's ready room where Picard, Riker, Data, and Mr. Mendoza, who's the Starfleet negotiator for the wormhole, are unsure of the actual stability of the wormhole and decide to investigate for themselves because the Barzan have very limited technology, which makes sense. And I thought this was a really good call. So they sent in an unmanned probe, which, you know, one is ought to do when you're dealing with a wormhole. Don't send anybody through there. Mm-hmm. And it came back. And so they're like, cool, it's stable. But I think as any good scientist knows, Charisse, you do not just do one test. You have to have redundancy. You have to do multiple, you know, run 20. And then let's take a look at, you know, if there's been any statistical differences between like the data. So they do one test, which I was like, that's not good enough. So Starfleet investigates for themselves. And I thought that was a good call. And the Ferengi are, of course, up to their conniving tricks. And they start using this, like, there's like this little kind of like subplot-ish almost where they're like using like some concentrate of like their blood chemical to give Mr. Mendoza like a severe allergic reaction. That poor man. Oh my God. He's just there to do his job. And suddenly he's freaking hospitalized.
But I have to say that was really clever on the Ferengi's part. Because before we've seen the Ferengi as just like these like kind of dumb, like kind of like people you don't even have to take seriously. And I feel like this scene, and I'm just now thinking this, I feel like this scene really sets them on a different level.
Yes.
They're not just doing the stupid like mind bending orb thing that they were doing to Picard back in season
one. Or the like monkey running in the last outpost.
Or the monkey running.
Yes.
No, like they are serious contenders to be taken seriously, because even though they're conniving and like deceptive and you can't really trust them, they're also clever. And that's what makes a good counterbalance to any other characters coming to the stage, especially in a negotiation where we've got a bunch of different alien species. Like, so I like that little like seeing them in the back and seeing how they're coming up with this trick, which I thought was very clever. It wasn't like a, let's just run in and steal it. You know, it was like very like, oh, okay, this could totally work. But then very quickly, immediately after they hospitalized Mendoza, they're in Picard's ready room. Like, what, you think it was us? Like, I guess they didn't get too far with that.
I had the exact same thought though. I was like, wow, the Ferengi are leveling up as foes, because at first they were like mosquitoes that you just want to, you can squish them really quick. Yeah. And now they're like, they're still annoying in their like uncouth manner, but they're showing that they've got some tricks up their sleeve and they are really willing to like play dirty. And it does indicate intelligence, which we did not get when they were like hooting and running around like monkeys and just being super offensive in the last outpost. So yeah, poor Mr. Mendoza's just like, I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark, you know, and then he falls over, you know, and luckily he falls over in Dr. Crusher's arms in sick bay. So,
well, I think he was making his way to sick bay. He was crawling down the corridor basically to sick bay so that he could get some help, and he kind of collapsed into the open doors. And my thought was, why didn't you do a site-to-site transfer directly into sickbay? Yeah. Why are you stumbling through the corridor? The ship is freaking huge.
You know, that does beg a very good question. Why don't they use site-to-site transport for medical emergencies? Because they say medical emergency and somebody comes with a little floaty stretcher or a stretcher with lights under it and wheels them around. And the ship is huge and there is sickbay, one. So
there's one sickbay with like five beds.
Yeah.
Like, you got, so my first thought was like, why didn't you site to site transport? But then I was like, well, they never do that. And it always would make sense. Then my second thought was, or why didn't you comm badge and just say medical emergency? Yeah. I feel like that's the kind of thing that would just go like to everyone, you know, you just be like, do medical emergency hallway, blah, blah, blah. And magically it's just like dialing 911. The floaty stretcher comes, picks you up and takes you to sick bay. So I had questions about why he was stumbling, but whatever he did, he stumbled all the way to sick bay and then immediately collapsed. And Beverly's like, I don't even know what's going on with him. Like, I don't even know what's wrong. And so Picard's like, all right, Riker, you're up.
Yeah.
You got to take his place.
Yes. Which was, I think, a very cool and like unexpected twist in this story where you're like, wait a minute, Riker is not a good, Like, I did not see that coming at all. And you know, you can only do those kind of plot twists a certain way that don't feel forced. And the Ferengi pulling a dirty trick is one of those ways. I think that was actually very clever on the writer's part. Meanwhile, Rahl picks Troy up for their date. And again, here comes the 1989 sexy music again, Charisse. We have so much of it in this episode. We're going to get so sick of it. He takes one look at her and he says, much better. And she says, thank you. And I say, you're an asshole. Okay. He is clearly one of those men whose entire game is based on negging women. And for those of you who don't know what negging is an act of emotional manipulation whereby a person makes a deliberate negative or backhanded compliment or otherwise like flirtatious remark to another person to undermine their confidence. And that increases their need of the manipulator's approval. I think Rahl is a person who, like, his whole game is just to neg people.
So I've never heard that definition before, but that sounded like straight up Webster. I've never heard that before.
Oh.
And that describes Rahl to a T, 100%. That's exactly who he is. That's exactly what he's about. That's his game, though, to be fair. That's how he does all his negotiations, too. He figures out his opponent's weaknesses and he undermines them. So he's just kind of a one-trick pony. And he's just doing the same thing to Troy. And yeah, I think I totally agree with you that Troy's response should have been like, okay, it was nice meeting you.
Yes.
The door is right there.
Much better. Yeah, he hadn't even come in yet.
Beep, beep. Yeah. Riker, you busy? Because I'm all dressed.
Like, I look amazing. Ready. I've got off the shoulder dress.
Yep, come on down because I need a palate cleanser after that experience.
Yes.
But that's not what happens. What happens is they just, you know, they make out and they go and have sex, and Troy's just so happy to be with him.
Yes. For some reason. I mean, those gorgeous eyes only go so far, Troy. It is not worth it. He kisses her and she turns away and he negs her again. And he's like, oh, I see. You're back in Counselor Troy mode, aren't you? And she's like, no, I'm not. And
now she's feeling defensive about being Counselor Troy, which is who she is. And there's nothing wrong with that.
And also the woman is taking a moment to just like feel her feelings. Compose
herself.
Like, that's fine. Yes. And he says, am I moving too fast? And she says, and this really got under my skin. She says, I think I'm moving too fast for me. And he goes, well, I like that better. It's like, this woman is indicating to you that like things are moving faster than she's maybe comfortable with. And you're like, cool, let me just whip it out. It's like, no, you know? And of course, because she's 1989 written, her feelings as a female aren't very important. She is just a sex tool. And he picks her up and swoops her away. And I just wrote, ugh, like in giant letters. It was just so.
How do you spell that exactly?
U-G-H. Period.
Okay, got
it. In all capital letters. And I read it three times. I wrote, ugh, ugh, ugh. In case you're wondering how to spell ugh, that's it. So yeah, this dude's ego is out of control. And she says, I haven't been able to stop thinking about you all day. To which he replies, Charisse, it must have been a nice day then. Get over yourself, Raul.
Yes.
Come on.
That's where I did the biggest eye roll of the whole episode was that moment right there where you're like, oh, come on.
That might have been the biggest eye roll of the entire series up to this point so far, I think, for me. Yes. Where I was like,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. I've just done.
You're not that great.
No.
Your eyes are beautiful. The end. Like, that's all. That's all you got so far. Like, you got to bring more to the table.
I can go to
the
holodeck and like create someone with beautiful eyes and have like a romantic date with them. I don't need all this. Someone who's actually positive and like loving, not like, there you go again, being lame. You're not lame, are you? Like, ew. Okay. Anyway. Well, while this is happening and we've got sexy music and wind blowing through hair, the Ferengi are pissed off that the Federation is sending a manned probe into the wormhole.
And they're not, because they feel like something fishy is going on there.
Like, just send your own one in, which Riker, right? We got indignant Riker. If you don't like I love when Riker gets indignant because they do the close up. We see his baby blues and his beard in full effect. And why don't you just send your own in? I don't understand why you need to be mad. Don't be mad that I'm doing something. If you want to do it yourself. I don't care. That's me though.
100%. Like, I mean, that it didn't need to become this whole big thing where they're like, this is outrageous and the Federation's undermining us and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it didn't need to be all that. It could have just been like, oh, okay, you guys are sending a man probe, then we're sending a man probe. But that wouldn't jive with the Ferengi's like culture and stuff. So I think that even that was giving us a little bit of a slice of life, kind of like the episode we had, The Enemy, which dropped, I think, last week, where we saw a little bit behind the scenes, behind the curtain of how the Romulans are. This is kind of that for the Ferengi. We're seeing like, even in a situation where there's like no need to have drama, they're causing drama because they're just a drama type of people.
Yeah.
Or like when they came in, they're like, where are our chairs? We need some chairs. It's like, that's just how they are. Yeah. Like they're so different. And I really, really like that. I like that we're getting some texture, flavor, and color
to
the Ferengi that makes them more three-dimensional.
You're right. We have so far seen a lot of different cultures that are like one-off cultures in Star Trek TNG. And they sort of play by the same set of like manner rules. And the Ferengi don't. And I think that's how it really would be, you know, if and when we ever get interplanetary like communication or like relationships.
Yeah, like if we had interplanetary relationships with other humanoids, exactly.
Yes,
like,
it would be.
They would be different.
They would be completely different. And like the rules are completely different. So I love that we do have this 1 second visual shot that I thought was pretty neat. And if you blink, you miss it. But the probes are going into the wormhole because, you know, Riker's like, hey, if you want to go into the wormhole, like get your probe and go do it yourself. And they're like, we will, right? So you see the Enterprise shuttlecraft with Data and Geordi in it. And then you see the Ferengi shuttlecraft, and they're side by side. And I was like, that is so cool because we're so used to seeing Federation shuttlecrafts, the kind of, you know, little boxy little pods. And now we see the Ferengi ones that's got like those little kind of two little things that are coming out of the front, like kind of pointy and like different color. And I don't know. I just thought like visually, this is kind of neat. This is kind of a cool little.
Yeah. And then as they're sitting in like doing their final checks or whatever, getting ready to enter the wormhole, and Geordi says, hey, do you guys want to take point? And they're like, no, we're going to leave the honor to you. Tee hee hee. I was like, nope.
Go first.
Like, I do not want, I'll pick up the rear. Yeah. Flying behind
nope.
Me. Yeah, I felt like that was so, like, everything about that was shady. And I'm like, man, as soon as they get into the wormhole, they're going to shoot them or disable their, like, transportation
system. Yeah.
They're going to do something shady. And you know what? That really just was not fulfilled. Like, they didn't do anything shady. So I'm not sure why they set it up that way. Maybe they meant to and then, like, deleted a scene. But I was waiting for them to, like, try to sabotage the Federation shuttle somehow from the way that they were like, you go first, tee-hee.
Yeah, they might have. But I will counter with this. I think it was just a tool to highlight how these two races can't get along very well. Because the wormhole visual was really cool. But there's so much disturbance in the wormhole. I'm sure you can't mess with transporters or phasers or whatever. You're just in this, like, crazy vacuum that's swirling around and basically, like, regurgitating and spitting you out somewhere else. So you're just along for the ride. I did not expect the Ferengi to do anything. I just thought, oh, this just further highlights, like, how they can't get along.
Or maybe they, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe they wanted them to go first in case anything bad happened.
Yeah, maybe. I do remember, okay, there's this anecdote I do remember. I'm a big military history buff, and especially focusing on World War II. And snipers were a really, really big problem in the battlefields of World War II. And they weren't battlefields so much as, like, towns that were just completely destroyed and bombed out and whatever. And if troops were marching, they'd kind of draw straws. They would draw straws to see, like, who would go first through, like, an opening or a gap, or, like, run down like a street to turn, like, around another building and like
to find out where the sniper is and where the ambush is.
Exactly. So they would draw straws to who would go first. So that way, like, it wasn't the same guy putting himself out there first. And honestly, it was the better straw to draw was the first, because the sniper isn't expecting you. So then, you know, you scamper down this little alleyway and turn the corner and you're out of range. But then now the next guy, like, the sniper has seen you and they've zeroed in on that alleyway. So if you're the second or third or fourth or whatever, that's the really shitty position to be in. Yeah.
So this is just another reason for why I will never be in the military. I am so not cut out for anything you just said.
Yep.
So,
I mean, same.
Thank you, men and women who serve. Thank you.
Yes.
I'll take the kids. You take the country. Yeah. How about we do that?
Yeah. See, I'm not cut out for that, but I am absolutely cut out for reading about it because I find it to be just so fascinating. But yeah, so I think that's kind of what they were doing. They're like, you go first, because if something bad's going to happen to you, we at least maybe have time to, like, turn around or
react or whatever.
Yeah. Anyway. Mm-hmm. The quick cut to Rawl massaging Troy's feet. And I was like, ew. First of all, massage 101, you don't put that much massage oil on anybody's feet. It was, like, dripping with oil. I was like, why are her feet so covered in oil? Like, this is really yucky.
My notes say, oh, and we're back to the foot washer. And then I said, but clearly Rawl is much better at this than Riker, because Troy looks very relaxed and very satisfied, unlike Brenna O'Dell.
Yes. 23 seconds later, it's over.
The other thing about this scene is as they're chit-chatting and he's bringing up Riker and all the stuff, and you're like, so clearly he's threatened by him and somehow knows there was a past between the two. Mm-hmm. When they kind of get past that and she's like, Riker's just a friend. At one point we were more, but now we're just friends. And then she says, I want to know all about you. And he's just like, what you see is what you get. No.
Don't do that.
You're all up in her business and her past and her life
and her body
and her thoughts and her body. And then she asks you, like, tell me one thing about you. And he's like, no, there's nothing to tell. Like, that to me was, like, red flag number 73 with this man, is that, like, a man with no past is a man not to be trusted. And there's reasons why people don't want to share their past. And I get that. And if you can't tell me anything about you, you better believe you're not having sex with me.
No.
Come on.
Although,
like,
seems like they already,
name,
seems like they already crossed that bridge. Sex
is
already
they
good
did,
and done.
Which is what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, she was just like, oh, you're so hot, I'm so into you, tell me something about you. And he's just like, there's nothing to tell. Like,
come on now.
Oh my gosh.
Well, he does confide that he's a quarter beta Zed. And then he uses it to, like, gain the upper hand in negotiating. So he does confide
that. Which is a
that.
Really important thing to know.
You think he does need to know that.
But
yeah.
He only confides that because she's also Betazoid.
Like, yes.
We still don't know anything about this man.
Yes.
Like, I still feel like that. Yes, that was a big secret to share. And he's just still very closed and just makes me feel uncomfortable.
I didn't like that.
He does reveal that.
Yeah.
He does reveal that, which is really important for the rest of the show.
She reveals way more than she wanted to. And he revealed way less than he wanted to. There's definitely like a reveal imbalance here. So Data and Geordi get to the end of the wormhole and find out they're not where they're supposed to be at all. Again, we have this great like Geordi visor situation where he's picking up like these elements that we have not discovered yet. And
the mesons and leptons.
Yes. I was like, those, like, I know, like I know the periodic table inside and out. And honey, those are not on there. So
they're not on there yet.
Not yet. But californium is on there. So there's still hope. Okay. But we know that like something, as our conversation inevitably goes, we're talking about the periodic table again. That is so us guys in a nutshell, but something is not right. Right. And Data's like, I don't know. Yeah. He's picking up like an increase of radiation. There's like a flood, like something's not right.
And instead of being in the gamma quadrant, they're in the delta quadrant. And I was like, what? The delta quadrant, for those of you who are not Star Trek Voyager fans, is where that entire ship ends up.
Yep.
They get pulled into the delta quadrant, which I have to know is 70,000 light years away or whatever. And so it's going to take them 70 years on like warp nine to get back home. And so I'm like, they're in the delta quadrant. Like that's bad news. And my immediate thought was like, go back. But I actually don't know how far the gamma quadrant is either. That also sounds really far.
It's farther. And like it's farther. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta. Actually, no, it's alpha, beta, gamma, delta. So they are farther than they thought they would be, not close. I didn't think about the Greek alphabet, but yeah, they're close. They're much farther than they thought they would be. The gamma quadrant is closer.
Yeah. And either way, that's like far. And I thought the manned probe idea was very brave for both Geordi and Data to volunteer for, because that's another thing. I would not be volunteering for that trip. Like
no
stable wormhole. I don't trust
Let's throw Data on there because he can come back in like 250 years. If like he gets trapped out there.
But what a lonely life. He doesn't care about that.
But like he doesn't remotely care about that. He'll just be like, okay, I'm going to start heading back. And he will show
up. He totally cares about that.
No.
He misses people. He misses Yar. He cares about like being alone in the world, in the universe. He says it a lot.
I think he does. But I think he would actually survive like just fine and come back and be like, I have many stories to tell you. But
yeah,
Geordi
would go crazy and he would die. Yeah. He wouldn't have the mental stress that
Geordi would have.
Anyone else would have. But like, gosh, this was just like, I just was like scared about this whole mission. I was like, this is a terrible idea, but it turned out to be fine.
If this wormhole really was stable and ended up like in the Delta, you know, let's say they're like, oh, we just miscalculated
somewhere else.
It really ends up in the Delta quadrant.
Coming back.
Voyager could have just come back home. That would have been like a perfect tie-in. How great would that have been? But it didn't turn out that way.
But I think that it does come back in Voyager, because in an episode of Voyager, so I'm getting ahead of this. So let's finish up what happens in the Delta Quadrant. Can we just finish that story and not come back and forth?
Okay. So, okay. Yeah. Let's break this up a little bit more, because we're jumping back and forth between Troy and then the wormhole. So they realize that the wormhole, number one, it spits them out, not where they're supposed to be. So they're like, okay, there are a few hypotheses that we can offer here. And I thought this was very good scientific like reasoning. One, the probe settings could have been messed up. So it could be stable and be dropping off at the, you know, Delta quadrant, but it could have just read it as gamma or something. Like there's something wrong with the probe, or there was nothing wrong with the probe sensors and the wormhole is spitting out in a bunch of different locations. So it might be stable on one end and not stable in the other. And that's what it turns out is happening, where Data and Geordi are trying to warn the Ferengi. And they're like, you guys, something is really wrong. Follow us in, like, we got to go. Like, as soon as this bad boy opens up, like, you got to jump on it and go. Which I thought, well, yeah, naturally. I mean, that's what you're there for. You're there to ride it one way and then ride it back. There's no dilly-dallying to be had there.
Right, but if it was a stable wormhole, they could have stayed longer.
Oh, that's
right?
True.
Because it would have been a stable. So if they had more time, they could have been like, you know, taken some readings and done some more extensive work. But Geordi could see through his visor what I guess the ships could not see through their sensors. To see like, this is actually unstable and I see it destabilizing before my eyes. Like I see this side of it in this location is not going to be here much longer. So we have got to go. And I kept thinking, I hope that these comms are being recorded, because if Ferengi are like, we don't need you. No, leave us alone. We're staying. Da, 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 da. You know, and they're like, come with us now. You don't have time. They're like, you don't even have 40 seconds. You've got to come with us.
I just thought lock on tractor beams, but you probably don't have a tractor beam on a shuttlecraft because I would have just hooked them and dragged them. Be like, no, we got to go.
They probably do, but they're grownups. They kind of got to make their own choices. But I just thought like when he gets back, there's going to be hell to pay with the Ferengi. Like, where's our cargo? Where's our ship?
Have you destroyed our men?
Maybe yeah. Where's our crewmen? But definitely where's like our property?
Yeah.
And for him to say like, oh, we tried to bring them, but they just didn't. They just said no. Seems like they wouldn't believe that answer.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was also thinking like, oh, this could cause drama. Like with, we had our episode last week with the enemy where the Romulan was on the planet and the other Romulan was like, where's my guy? Where's my guy? You know, and they were like, this is going to cause a big incident mm-hmm. if we don't get our guy back. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking the same thing with the Ferengi. I was like, oh no, if they don't get their guys back, like this could cause an incident. So I hope they're recording all this yeah. to like, prove we told them to come. We begged them to yep. come. We warned them to come. They chose to stay. But we just like never addressed that issue. So
yes.
I guess, okay. But here's what I want to say. Geordi and Data go into the wormhole because they're like, forget it. We got to go.
Yeah.
They go into the wormhole, they zap off. And then a few seconds later, the wormhole shows back up really big and pretty. And the Ferengi are like, ha ha ha. That's exactly what we thought. We knew it was going to come back exactly where we said, because this is stable and they were just trying to trick us. And then it instantly blinks out.
Yeah. Forever. It like travels. It doesn't blink out so much as it like zooms away. So you're like, wait, come back. Like you see, it is leaving, which by the way, the wormhole CGI didn't love that. Felt a little, it definitely felt a little like 1989 computer graphics. Yeah. But yes, it like zipped away. So like, there's no catching it. Now it's gone.
It's gone forever. Their faces was everything. They were just like, cause like, they were like, oh shoot. Like this is the kind of thing you don't want to realize you were wrong about. Like you just don't. But here's the thing that was interesting. In an episode of Voyager, there are these two Ferengi who are trapped on a planet in the Delta Quadrant and they are treated like gods because the alien planet they fell on had never seen Ferengi before and started worshiping them. And the Ferengi were all about that.
Of course they were. Advantage takers 101.
And I am like now, and after watching this episode, I'm like 99% sure those two Ferengi were these two Ferengi
mm-hmm.
who got trapped there. Because I remember they said, oh, we got trapped here. Da, da, da. And I'm like, oh my gosh, those are the guys. That's how they got there.
Oh, so anyways,
there is a where are they now for the two guys.
Oh my God. I love that. That is like a callback to a completely different series in the same universe. Like that is so effing cool. I have seen a bunch of Voyager episodes, but not since they were like aired, you know, on yeah. TV. So I, you know, you are like the Voyager supermind. So I haven't seen that episode, but oh my God, I would have seen that episode and not even connected the two dots.
I never have until that moment when I was like, oh, that's them. And that's how, like so cool.
That is amazing. Okay. So now we have that. Now we know the wormhole is not stable. So let's just hope Data and Geordi get back and like warn them in time, warn the Enterprise in time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the Ferengi are stuck 70,000 light years from home. So that's an oopsies. Now at this point, Rahl is feeling ultra confident. He has dipped his toe into the River Troy and he is going to go cause some mayhem. So he kind of talks out, he's playing up. One of the negotiators is a Caledonian, very cool, like alien makeup, very mm-hmm. tall man. And he's like kind of playing up the Caledonian's trepidation. And the Caledonian quickly pulls out a negotiation and Rahl absorbs all the like gold that they were going to offer in exchange mm-hmm. for like protection or whatever by the Chrysalians. And Deanna finds out about this and she and him are having dinner in her quarters and she's starting to get pissed. She's like, you use this to like manipulate, you use your empathic ability without telling people and you use it to gain the upper hand and like manipulate people's feelings. And I think that's like very uncool. And he is just so cavalierly bragging about gaining the upper hand and like manipulating people. And he tells mm-hmm. her that she doesn't seem to mind. This is what he said. He said, you didn't seem to mind when I used my empathic ability to like get you. I was like, ew, dude. Like mm-hmm. you're admitting to using like an underhanded trick to get me into bed. And then you're like putting it on me. Like, well, you didn't mind when I did it to you. I didn't know you were doing it to me. That mm-hmm. was just so like unethical. Oh my gosh. And then he has the gall to like question Deanna's ethics for using her empathic abilities to protect the crew, like if in a life and death situation. And I mean, I think he did bring up a solid point where he's like, when you're dealing with the Romulans and it's a dangerous situation, do you use your empathic ability to like serve your captain, or do you announce it and broadcast it so that the Romulans know that you use it as well? But I think she also brought up a solid counterpoint. Like, that's different. Like, this is life and death. I'm not using it to gain like property from people.
Right. To which he argues, I'm not using it for combat. I'm not using anything to hurt people. I'm just using it to buy and sell property. You're using it in actual like situations where you use it to hurt people, right? Like, you use it to know how to like fight people or, battle people, which was another good point. So they had a lot of good points. And I felt like it's not unethical for him to use his powers if he was telling people that he had those powers. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the thing about it that makes it sleazy. Like, him having the powers and using the powers, I think is fine, because she has the powers and she uses the powers.
Yeah.
But and she's not going to tell the Romulans that she's an empath. Okay. But she might, like, it could come up, mm-hmm. right? She could say he's lying. You're talking about, and she could say, I'm an empath. I know you're lying. Mm-hmm. Like, and she has done that plenty of times where she's been like, I'm an empath. I know what you're feeling, you know? And so I feel like that's the difference, is that she's not being secretive about her superpower.
Yes.
Whenever she uses it,
yes.
He is keeping it an ultra secret. So it just seems like magically things work out.
Yeah.
And that like conniving spirit of going behind people's backs and like playing on their fears, that's the thing.
He
that makes
is not worth
not
it,
that he
Troy.
Is. Yeah. Not that he is empathic,
yeah.
but that he uses it as a weapon
yes.
in like secret. Shots from the shadows.
Yes, absolutely. He is not worth it. So he storms out of their date and heads to 10 forward and sees Riker. So he's like, I am going to fuck with Riker. And
yep.
the beginning of the scene was so infuriating, and the end of the scene was so satisfying, because he intimates very obviously that he and Troy are hooking up, and he's like, he does call Riker out. He's like, you should have done everything you could to keep a woman like Deanna, but you didn't. And like, you lost her, but like, I'm here now and I'm going to take her away. And you know what? Truth to power. Like, Riker could have done more to hold on to Troy for sure, but they both seem to be okay with like the path that each has taken. So whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I love how Riker, who's now the negotiator for Starfleet, totally turns it on him. It was a delight to watch. He's like, this is your first bad step right here, Rahl. If anyone mm-hmm. is going to increase Deanna's happiness, I'm there for it. You absolutely mm-hmm. should take her with you if it makes her happy. But I doubt that you're smart enough to actually do that. And you can see Rahl is watching this whole argument kind of crumble in front of him and going, what? But
I've made a huge mistake. You could just see that across his face. Yeah.
And then Riker good. Just so casually saunters out. And I was like, yes, yes, Riker. Thank you. Just slaps that smirk off of his face. I love it.
He totally does. And he also says to him, like, and Deanna would be good for you because you're a terrible person and she could help straighten you out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, wow. Like, I love the way that he is so supportive of her and her happiness. And like, anybody else, they would have totally fell for that bait
mm-hmm.
and been all upset and like all this stuff. But Riker's just like, I want her to be happy
yeah.
and you suck. So if she can make you not suck, that's even better. This
yeah.
is a little bonus, but you know what? That's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well,
peace
think,
out.
I think at first Rahl got under his skin with that Deanna comment, but Riker is an intelligent man and he knows, he's got that poker thing down. Like, he knows when someone's bluffing. And I love when you see the dawning comprehension on him and he starts to smile mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, Riker's on to him. Okay, cool. Because I would have been like, don't talk to me like that. Get away from me. Da, da, da. Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what Rahl wanted. He wants to upset Riker. Mm-hmm. So Riker loses his advantage and like Rahl wins mm-hmm. the negotiation. But man, Riker stepped up and I fucking love it. I was like, yes, thank you. Because it left Rahl just looking at his little crumbled house of cards and Riker mm-hmm. being like, toodles.
Yeah.
So that was great. So the negotiation here comes to a head when the Ferengi attempt to like attack the wormhole and they're shooting phasers at it, which what's a phaser going to do to a wormhole? It's like trying to shoot a black hole. It's nothing.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. This is also from Voyager. So I actually don't know if any of this could even be true. Something tells me no, but in sci-fi, it's a thing. So when you fire at a wormhole, you can destabilize it.
Oh,
because it's already like an unstable kind of reaction of gases in space?
Question mark?
So what exactly is it? So I don't know. I don't know what it's made out of, but if you fire, but it's already unstable, it's already not super stable. And if you fire phasers at it and have like explosions happening near the aperture, near the opening, mm-hmm. it destabilizes that part of the wormhole and closes it. Mm-hmm. So by Damon Goss shooting at the wormhole, he could have destabilized it, which means nobody gets it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that was like a legitimate threat. So then, you know, Picard's like, what is he doing? Worf, destroy that thing. Yep. Like, destroy that yep. little like torpedo he shot or whatever, you know, and just like, what is he trying to do? We have the Enterprise.
Yeah.
We got this tiny little vessel. Like, what the heck? And then, you know, Raoul uses this to be like, hey, Premier, to the Barzan woman, like, hey, Premier, like, you see, they're all about conflict and violence. This is what they're going to use your wormhole for. Mm-hmm. They're not the right people. Like all the stuff that you don't see him say that, but you just see them kind of like, shut the door and the conversation starts. And so she goes with him and he said he was going to make this play, not this exact play,
yeah.
but he told Riker in their little 10 forward conversation that I'm ready to bid on it before we find out the results of your survey team, before anybody comes back and tells us whether or not the wormhole's stable, I'm willing to like put all of our money on the table and like buy it out because I take risks and all that stuff. And that's exactly what he did. He created a scenario where he could buy it outright before hearing anything about the results.
Yep.
And I was just like, so happy that bit him in the butt.
It did. That yeah. So really good. Yeah. So the Premier gives the contract to Raoul and the Cressalians because this scene plays out perfectly. And I love that Troy goes, wait a second. And she puts him on blast, which I absolutely love a good putting on blast when someone's had it coming. She says, okay, I can read your emotions. First of all, she says, I'm sorry. Is there something you want to say? Which is very 20th century, 21st century. I thought it was so great. And he says, no.
And he's like, no.
And she goes, well, that's weird because your emotions are really high. And he's like, well, it's a high emotional time, you know? And she's like, actually, but that's just a thing. It's not like the Ferengi's emotions were not high. Yours were not running high. It's as if you were playing the scene out for us to like watch and buy into. And Captain, I have a feeling that they pre-planned this out. And I love that the ring, he's like, I was upset. I'm so upset. My emotions are high. Like, I thought that was really funny. I was like, it was comedic without being slapstick, which I appreciate a lot.
Yes. And which is what the Ferengi are so fantastic.
Oh,
at.
Just so good.
Like having that personality.
So yeah. good. And I love that Picard is like, turn the fucking screen off. Like mid-sentence, he's like, he just hung up on it, which was so delightful. And she tells everyone that like, he has empathic abilities. He's part Beta Zed, and he uses it to gain the upper hand to manipulate the negotiations in his favor. And that she's had an inappropriate like, relationship with him. And like, he asked her to keep that secret too. And she's just not having it anymore. And I was like, yes, yes. Like I was clapping. Like it was,
I was like, is she going to tell his secret? Or is she going to keep her word to like, not tell his secret? Cause she could have still done that whole thing of like, he's manipulated you, blah, 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 without telling his secret. But she chose not to.
She, and you know what? She took the petty route. She took Petty Avenue, and I was there for it. She really, really put him on blast, and I fucking loved it because now he's going to have that reputation as someone who has empathic abilities. Like that secret's not going to be able to stay contained. Now people are going to know, mm-hmm. and that is going to put him back on an even playing field with other people. Which yeah. I thought you.
And now
you
he can
that.
Come into the room. Yeah, now he can come into the room and say, "I'm an empathic negotiator."
Yes,
like
yes,
and just be upfront and not be so sneaky.
Yes, and after his entire life crumples before his eyes, it maybe not that dramatically, but roughly, Data and Geordi barely make it out of the wormhole and tell the captain, "It's unstable on one end." And its instability is growing. So it's going to be unstable at both ends soon. So the wormhole is useless. And I love that Riker goes, well, Raoul, let me be the first to congratulate you on your contract as a Premier for the wormhole. It's like, oh, everybody has got their knives out for Raoul. Yeah. And he
so Riker,
deserved it.
Riker got on that on Petty Avenue as
he
well.
He did. He took Petty Junction to Petty Avenue and full on took the Petty Expressway and was like, let me just... He's eating a peppermint patty and he is like, how many of these do I have? I don't know.
So many. I'm so impressed.
Thank you.
By
right
that
off the
right
top
now.
Of my head, girl. I'm on fire this morning. So
this is why I love you as my co-host.
Thank Thank you. So I love that he's like, let me just shake the hand of the man who won the wormhole contract. Congrats. He's like, he's practically mm-hmm. pulling down a banner and balloons. And mm-hmm. this man is like, mm-hmm. oh God.
Yep. And I've made a huge mistake.
So the last thing we really see is Rawl goes to visit Troy to say goodbye. And I'm saying, why?
Why? Are we still friends? No.
Girl, lock the door and don't answer. Just lock the door, put up a do not disturb sign, pretend you're not home, don't answer. And she actually invites him in and he kind of is like, well, I'm heading out now. And she's like, okay, well, where are you going to go now? And I just stopped the episode right there. I was like, I don't need to watch any more of this. There is no reason for you to have any kind of wrap-up discussion. You put him on blast. You told his business to everyone. You have every right to be furious at him. And now he has every right to be furious at you. Just go to the fucking transporter room and just leave. Just go. You don't need to say goodbye.
So, I mean, it does provide a sense of closure for anyone who wants a more positive ending than the just like put him on blast. We're both pissed at each other. And then you travel off to the Cresselians and we never see each other again. So I'll tell you what happened since you didn't watch it.
Okay.
they basically just kind of chit chat. And then he kind of like, I forget if he kisses her or not, but he says like, you know, I asked you to run away with me before, like back when they were doing the foot washing. He's like, so I'm going to ask you again. Like I could really use somebody like you around, you know, to like basically be my conscience. And she was like, no, thanks. I already have a job as ship's counselor.
That's right.
So it's like, he in the beginning was like criticizing her for being the counselor all the time and how she shouldn't be the counselor, but now he's wanting her to come away with him to be his counselor and like full time, which is just nonsense. You know, and it actually reminded me of a story where this similar thing happened to me in college. A good guy friend of mine said something similar to me, not run away with me to be my conscience, but basically like, we would be so great together because you would like keep me on the straight and narrow.
No,
or something.
I'm not your mom.
I was like, yeah, where I looked at him and I was like, you can keep yourself on the straight and narrow. Why would I need to control you?
Yeah.
You can control your darn self. And I just had this like flashback and this visceral reaction when he's like, I could use you to be my conscience. How about you use your conscience to be your conscience? How about that? Like, she's not here to service you.
Also,
you've been
like negging me the whole time about being ship's counselor. Now you're like, but you can be my counselor. The last thing I need is a man telling me, but I can change and you could be the one to change me. I am not, you know what I love? Fixer upper homes that I can like make them look cute. I am not looking for fixer upper men. Give me a break with that already. Like that is just, and I think that is also like, we have to think about the time that this was written, that was kind of a fairly commonly thrown around like plot device. It's like, but I can change and you could be maybe just the person to change me. You're a grown ass man. Change yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. And you don't want to change, man. Like this has been your whole life so far. There's nothing in you that really wants to change. There's no way you can veer that far from your default setting overnight just because she comes with you. Nothing's going to change. And like, anyway, so yeah, just watching that last scene, I was just like, I was so glad that she was like, no, I already have a job as a counselor. Mm-hmm. I'm good.
I wouldn't leave for Riker. So I sure as shit am not leaving for you, dude. Also, you suck. All right. Well, I feel like we've done all of our thoughts. So do we need final thoughts? I don't know.
No,
I feel like we got them all. This was actually a really, really fun episode to tear down. I have been worried a little bit, full disclosure, that these episodes are just getting so good and so natural that there isn't that much to talk about. But look at us, like 3 hours later, we're still talking about this episode. There's so much to talk about and like what's happening. I love doing this with you, Charisse. And guys, thank you so much for listening. Next week, we're talking season 3, episode 9, The Vengeance Factor.
Yeah. And next week's episode is very interesting. So again, it's not a bad episode.
It's really good.
I don't know if we've had a skip yet this whole season.
Nothing.
So definitely come back next week. Same great place, same great channel. And we will do this all again.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.